Hello?
Come on.
Get connected with Take Two Radio on Facebook or Twitter at Take Two Radio. For email updates on future shows, follow at Blog Talk Radio. For previous episodes, upcoming guests, and more, visit TakeTwoRadio.com.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to Take Two Radio. I'm Pam, your host. And joining me today as my co-host is my sidekick, David. Say hello, David.
Hi, Pam. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Been a long time, hasn't it?
I know. I feel like
I forgot
out of
the
it.
Number.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, because of my father being in the hospital, in which he's still there and very, very ill, we haven't been able to do any shows, so... you know, he's still there, but I guess life must go on, and we keep praying for him. And we're going to have fun tonight, so we're going to forget all of our problems and all that good stuff. So what do you think? Ready?
I think it's a good idea, yes.
Good. Well, today we have the pleasure of chatting with actor and comedian Eric Jacob. And Eric, welcome to our show.
How are you doing, Pam and David?
We're doing. You doing?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to be on.
Thanks. So did you work today? What were you up to?
I was relaxing today. I was on a shoot last night till around 1 a.m. for a web series called Neverland up in Sparta, New Jersey. So we were shooting the final scene for episode 2. So I was up pretty late, got home, and just needed to kind of unwind today from that. So, yeah, today was a relaxing day for me, first of all.
Yeah, it's kind of nice to be able to go at your own schedule. You know, when you have something to do, you do it. When you don't, right?
Exactly. But yeah, I try to keep busy. I try not to have a lot of free time, to be honest.
Yeah. And actually, with everything that I've read and that we're going to talk about today, I honestly am amazed to find that you do have a day off today.
Thank you. Yeah, it was nice and relaxing, and it was much needed. But
you do have to take some time to yourself, so otherwise you'll get overwhelmed, and that's not good.
Oh, totally. Yes, especially in this industry.
Right, right. Yeah, I don't know if you watch Supernatural. Do you watch that at all?
I haven't gotten to it yet. You know, lately it's been hard for me to catch some shows because I do a lot of night shoots or I'm at clubs performing. So, you know, I just
haven't. Well, dude, it's been on for 10 years. Don't tell me you haven't had time.
No, okay. But yeah, I mean, I'm just, you know what, I got a ton. So yeah, it's funny, the shows I do watch, you know, I'm like totally dedicated to, you know,
yeah.
Like it's, you know, it's, and then I got my DVR, so I mean, I could.
I'm just teasing you. The reason I brought it up is because Jared Padalecki, who plays on there, actually just really had a downward spiral and kind of broke down from doing so much all the time on the go, and feels like he's always got to, you know, be out there and entertaining people. And it just caught up with him. And so he had to cancel a couple of things and take some downtime and now he's back and up and wearing to go. So just always remember that. It'll catch up with you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like anything. If you don't take care of yourself, you just, you know, it's going to hit you. But, you know, that's the thing. You got to be aware of it and just keep going and, you know, having fun while you're going going along, you know?
Yep, exactly. So let's start out with a little bit of, like, walk down your life path or whatever you want to call it. Or was that show, like, Here's Your Life or something it was called?
This is your life. This is your life.
That's it. Tell us a little bit about, like, when you were growing up, did you always want to be in the entertainment business? Were you a class clown or, you know, all that good stuff?
You know, it's funny. In high school, I thought all my friends were funny. And I guess, you know, being brought up in the East Coast, and I was raised in New Jersey in Marlboro, Monmouth County, all my friends were funny. And my closest friend was class – my two closest friends, male and female, were class clowns. So I didn't realize – I was like, I thought I was funny, but I thought everybody I knew was funny. And in high school, you know, I wanted to be in entertainment. I was just – you know, I was really into sports and collectibles. I started a business when I was younger, a sports promotion business to meet athletes. Just so me and my friend wanted to get free autographs, so we started hiring athletes and stuff. Yeah, so it was cool. And you know, I got into also autographs of stars, of Hollywood stars too, and that always intrigued me. But I was always into entertainment, so I think that's the acting intrigued me before the autographs kind of thing. And you know, I went to college in New Mexico. So when I got there is when I realized I was funny. I had friends, you know, not everybody in New Mexico is funny. it was a different sense of humor. And I had a lot of friends start saying to me, they're like, you know, you're really funny. And I finally started realizing, hey, I am. And summer of college, one of my first summer there, I came home to New York. I was in New York and I did stand-up comedy. And I did it a few times and somewhat successful. You know, and went back to college, did it a few more times, and through the years, I only did it a handful more times. But I always wrote. I continued throughout my life. I always wrote, whether it was songs or poems or comedy skits or something would happen that was funny, and I would just continue writing it down. I have notebooks and napkins. I have boxes full of stuff that I've written through the years, and sometimes I'll find it. And I'm like, what am I thinking? You know,
yeah.
other times I knew exactly where I was at. I was like, I was at a bachelor party for this one, you know, but, yeah, I always think I was funny. I was funny in school. Everyone now from high school says, oh, I was very funny in high school, but I just didn't realize it, I guess, at the time. And, yeah, you know, I can continue doing. I stepped away from comedy for a long time. You know, you said you were reading about me, and last year my wife sent me an email about a contest right near me in Princeton. I live in Princeton now for Catch a Rising Star Comedy Club, and I decided she sent it to me, and I decided to enter. And after three rounds, I kept continuing through the rounds, and each round that I got more confidence, and I was like, wow, I can do this. And each week I wrote a whole new routine where every other comedian had the same routine each week. And I didn't realize until I got to the finals. I didn't know that I had new material, that I was only one. And and I won it. And then I started opening for a lot of national people, which got me more confidence. You know, sometimes I did well and sometimes I didn't do well, which that's when you learn the most, which stinks, you know, because to learn,
definitely.
You got to be bad.
well, how do you get around a joke that bombs? You know, how do you just go on to the next joke or what?
I've bombed where like people started talking to me and not like heckling me, like literally asking me questions. I performed in LBI last year, Long Beach Island, last summer, and as I'm doing a routine, I was like, yeah, I used to be a realtor, and the guy's like, where are you from? And
oh my God!
Like, I mean, it wasn't like he was heckling me. He's, you know, and they start asking, you know, like what kind of realtor? I mean, you know, so you could only, you know, I had to ignore them. And eventually, what happened for the next comedian, they had to call the police on them. But it was Bobby Collins had to call the police on them. and he said to me, "This never happened to me in 30 years." I said, okay. But, you know, so if I bomb on a joke, I got to keep going. You know, it's it's all of a sudden you're like a deer in headlights. You know, nobody laughs. And you thought, that didn't work well. and you got to just stay in your mindset for the next bit and continue going. And it sometimes feels like you're walking through mud. And, you know, and then all of a sudden there's that one person that laughs. You're like, ah, I got him. You know, and then sometimes everybody laughs, and you're like, okay, this is easy. But it's, yeah, you just got to keep going through it.
Yeah, I would imagine that does take a lot of practice, you know, because not everything's going to be funny. You may think it's funny, but somebody else may not think it's funny. And that was another thing. You write jokes about everything that inspires you and even people that are closest to you, like your wife. Now,
yes.
Has she been at one of your shows and you tell a joke about her and then there's a really long, quiet car ride home?
No, you know what? I talk about her private parts. I talk about everything. She's very aware of what I'm going to say ahead of time. She's very cool about it. You know, I talk about everything from her to my father now has Alzheimer's, early stages. I talk about that. I asked, you know, earlier in the year, I asked him if we could talk about it. And I said, it's going to be very tasteful. And it's really more about not mocking him, more about the family members and how it affects them and the humor of us adjusting to it, you know?
Right.
So, you know, and also like you were saying, when you're doing comedy, it's not always, sometimes it's also about the crowd or the age. You know, I could talk about Facebook and social media, and one crowd could be really young and get it, and then it could be a theater crowd and much older, and they don't get it. But then they may get the Jewish grandparent humor, but the younger people, like my niece and nephew who are in their 20s, don't get it. You know, so it's sometimes it's knowing the crowd. It's not always the joke. It's just the crowd.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But, yes, my wife's very aware. Going
well,
back to that question.
that's a good thing.
It's never been quiet. Yes. Yeah, and she likes it. She likes the jokes, you know, and I guess, you know, it's and I advertise about, you know, her, so.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's good there.
I can't even imagine, you know, being sitting in the audience and you talking about private parts. I mean, my gosh.
Yeah. I've practiced in front of my son. I don't say a curse word. You know, literally, I'll say anatomical parts, but I'm – and I don't do it on purpose. It's just I don't really speak that way anymore. You know, in college I was more swearing and cursing, and I realize I just don't speak that way anymore. So that's why I don't use that in my routine. You know. Sorry, what was that?
I was going to say I find that funnier. You know, more like, and I kind of hate to bring up a controversial name, but I have always loved Bill Cosby because he doesn't swear, whereas other ones are funny that swear, but to me it's funnier the way he does it because I think that's how you do it with personal stuff. And
yeah,
you can see yourself in that situation.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you said controversial. You know, like him as a comedian is not controversial. But,
no.
You know, obviously his private life. But, yeah, as a comedian, I always admired him. You know, whether I remember back in 1984, the show with Bill Cosby himself was a stand-up routine.
Oh, my God. That is the funniest one. I saw him do that live in Las Vegas. Oh, my God.
You know, and he talks about his son, Enos, who, you know, passed away a long time ago. But, you know, he talks about the kids, and it's great. And I talk about my son a lot. You know, I do a bit called Operation Poop, how when you have to go to the bathroom, if we know if he's serious and he has to go, he'll say Operation Poop, or if it's either me or my wife, you know, we have a sensitive stomach, it's a very serious thing, we rush to the car, it's the whole big, you know, but otherwise, to get him in the car, it can take 20 minutes. You say that, and he's, you know, he's like Starsky and Hutch, you know, just sliding across the hood and getting in the car, you know, he knows, you know, but, and he loves that routine, but it's true to life, you know, it's very...
Right.
You know, I talk about is real life, and it's mostly I talk about my friends, I talk about work, I talk about my wife, I talk about my son, I talk about my parents, I talk about clients, I definitely talk about marriage constantly, and you know, my neighborhood, there was robberies in my neighborhood, I talk about that, how the cops were recruiting me, you know, different things, you know. I called 911. They told me to follow the robbers. You know, it's the whole thing to do.
David, you had a question you wanted to ask.
Eric, as I was growing up, I was always told that laughter is the best medicine. So, with that being said, how did your father first react to the Alzheimer's jokes?
Honestly, that is an amazing question. So the last two weeks, I got a lot of press. So I just did a big show up at the George Street Playhouse in New Brunswick, right by Rutgers, next to the State Theater, and I filmed it. I have a future DVD coming out for this film. And so I got a lot of press. I was front page of Trenton Times and Time Off magazine, and I was at the Princeton Sun, and it mentioned my father's Alzheimer's. And he forgot that me and him had this conversation months back. And he forgot that me and him talked about me doing some routines. And it was very hard because he just didn't remember that we had this discussion, and he didn't really think people knew. And people knew. Family and friends knew, but, you know, the situation, he just didn't realize people knew. And he forgot that. So it was very hard, and it was very upsetting in a sense. You know, like, my mother was excited to see the article, and she knew everything, and he was very excited at first, the articles, and then he read it. He was very upset, and he couldn't sleep, and then we had a talk, and I said to him, you know, we had this conversation, and I reminded him of it, and he didn't remember it, but he knew I wouldn't have done it without his permission, you know, and
right.
Which was hard, and right. So when I did the routine on Saturday, you know, he was there, both my parents, and, you know, my brothers were there, and it was about, the routine pretty much is about, you know, the first thing, my brother was in the hospital for another reason, and my father was there, and the doctor's talking to my brother, and he asks my brother, what's his last name? And my father leans over to me, and he says, Jacob. And then the doctor asks my brother what year it is, and my dad, standing next to me again, leans over and says, 2015. And I'm looking at him kind of confused, you know, and then the doctor asks my, you know, my dad and the doctor asked my brother, what color is my latex gloves? And my brother doesn't answer. My dad says purple. And he starts celebrating. I said, what are you doing? He's like, I passed the test. I'm like, not your test. You know? And he's like, I knew all the answers. And it's that kind of, that pretty much happened. In almost the one thing I didn't put in the routine is then the doctor said to my brother, what day of the week it is? And my brother didn't answer. And I said to my mom, my brother doesn't know what day of the week it is. My dad's like, neither do I. You know, it was just, you know. it's things, you know, it's things like that, you know.
Yeah.
With truth, you have to exaggerate it. And the reality was, at the time, me and my mom were kind of upset. My dad didn't know what day of the week it is. But, like, I've always made jokes about it, and my mother always, you know, and I said, if you can't laugh about it, I mean, if you can't, you know, you'd be crying about it if you can't laugh about it.
Right.
Kind of.
Right.
And so that was one of the bits about it. And when I did it, afterwards, I said, what'd you think? And he's like, yeah, it was all right. He's like, did it happen? I said, it did. And my mom's like, oh, yes, it did. So then he kind of laughed, and when he saw everyone else laugh, and I had a lot of people approach me telling me that they had family members with Alzheimer's, and they laughed at that. He got much more relaxed. And so, so David, with what you're saying, he first reacted he was very upset, but then he saw it wasn't malicious and it wasn't this,
right.
this tasteful thing, you know. But,
right, yeah.
And,
great.
You know, that's, you know, so, but no, it was a big success on Saturday, which was great. And, you know, he was happy and I filmed it and we're editing right now, which is great. And, you know.
And then what are you going to do? Are you going to sell it, the DVD?
So the DVD, I'm editing it in a couple different ways. One, I'm going to be submitting it to comedy festivals and film festivals. And also I'm going to be trying to sell it to like a Hulu or Netflix for streaming purposes. So And also use it as promotion. I'm going to make it almost a 2-minute version as like a trailer for a movie, just to send to like casting directors, producers, so they could just see what kind of work I do in a quick 2-minute thing instead of showing them a 35-minute, you know, stand up routine. So they don't have the time in the daytime, but they can watch a 2-minute reel kind of thing.
Right. Exactly.
So I'm doing that. I just did that. You know, also. Just finished, I don't know if you know, I star in a new web series with comedian Tommy Gooch. called What's It Gonna Take?
Yeah, that's we were going to talk about that. So go ahead and tell our listeners what it's about. And I'll have to tell you that David and I watched the trailer and that they have on Silver Tree Entertainment. It is so freaking funny. And I have to ask you, did the hair grow back under your pits yet?
Okay, they have not. I know you're going to tell you. They have not. So I'll tell the audience what. So the web series, it's a prankster web series. So me and fellow comedian Tommy Gooch, great guy, really funny, professional comedian, works nonstop. So me and him got together, well, me and him star in this web series. And so, as you said, Plinmar Productions, Silver Tree Entertainment is streaming it. And so it's each episode we're trying to outdo each other. So he knows this yoga instructor. I think it was like through his mother's friend or something like that. And I'm taking yoga, and I'm like, I could teach yoga. So I'm trying to convince the guy I could teach yoga. And we have a bet. Each time we have a bet, and we don't always know who we don't know what the final bet is always until afterwards. And I lost the first one, which you saw, and he chose for me to get my armpits waxed.
Oh, my God.
And I had no idea. And especially, like, going into, there was, oh, my gosh. I once, the yoga instructor who owns the studio was this guy, Eddie, really great guy, Eddie Cordero. And it was kind of his idea. And I was like, who brought this guy in? Really? He's volunteering my armpit? And he's like, it's going to be so painful. And if you watch the whole episode, oh my, I was sweating. I was praying to God. It was so painful. And I thought, you know, each armpit, they do it once. I mean, I've never had wax on me. Super hot. You know, it took like 8 or 9 strips to do an armpit. And, I mean, if you watch it, you see. And I was, like, screaming for the woman's name. I'm like, Renee. You know,
yeah, like that movie, that 40 movie, Virgin, whatever it's called.
Yes, 40-Year-Old Virgin with Steve Carell and Jeff. And, they did a – it's really painful. I mean, a lot of women know, you know, it's waxing to be painful. And I've never had my armpits waxed, obviously. And it's funny because the director, Tony, I saw her – we had to finish shooting an episode, and I said the hair hasn't even grown back yet, really, like only a little. She's like, really? And we shot that months ago. I mean, back in April. And it's coming in, but slowly. But very, very painful.
Do you feel cooler without it? Or you've
missed
it. I'll
tell you, in the summer, it's great. I was like, wow, it's just really, you know. But it was worth it. You know, for the show, it was worth it. It ended up, it's really funny. We had a blast doing it. You know, walking out of there, I felt like I couldn't lift my arms. Like, it was just, I don't know, it felt weird, like sticky. But, it was a lot of fun. We were laughing the whole time. They were really laughing because, obviously, I was the one in pain and just complaining and, you know, kicking. And, you know, I was like, I need stirrups. I kept falling off the chair, you know. To watch it, you said it, the trailer, you know, and to check out the episodes on SilverTreeEntertainment.com. It's very funny. You know, Tommy, he's harassing me while I'm laying there, and he's laughing, and Eddie's
hysterical.
Well,
you actually let him do one of the thing when he pulled off one of the strips. I was like, what? You let him do it?
No, if you during it, you hear me screaming at him. I'm like, and I was screaming at the woman. I'm like, Renee, do not let him do it. Do not let him do it. And he's like, I'm going to do it. And my arm's up, but I couldn't stop him. And I didn't want him doing it, if you see. And the director was, when she was filming it, she said, like, her hand was shaking, like, laughing. The camera was shaking. You know, they were laughing so hard. And the producer and the other women in this, you know, we were not the only ones in the salon. So there's women hysterical laughing at me. You know, they're like, oh, come on. I'm like, I've never had this done before. I need vodka.
To tell you that us women, when we do that, you know, you get used to it pretty much if you do it all the time. at least in my experience where I, you know, I do my legs, and now I barely have to ever do anything because the hair doesn't really grow back. So it's a good thing to do. So if you want to keep those pits free and clear, you're going to have to keep doing it.
I'll tell you what, and it's funny afterwards, and you'll see on the episode, I saw it was so bruised. I remember I said, oh, my God, is it black and blue? And it was bleeding, too. Like,
there was blood,
I mean, it's painful, you know. It's not like
a
man, you know, I'm older, you know.
Well, you had a lot under there, too.
Thanks, yes. You know, but my family's from Eastern Europe, you know, so.
Well, I want to mention for our listeners, you actually got this gig because the director from Surviving Sam was so impressed with you that he created this new web series for you. I mean, what does that mean to you?
She did. No, no, it's okay.
What does that mean to you?
You know, it really meant a lot, and it's interesting. Tony is, she's amazing, and she's great, and she's really calm, which is really, it's easy for an actor on set because, you know, sometimes when you're an actor and you're a comedian, there's a lot of, you're not aware, you know, there's unpredictability, so especially on stage when you're doing comedy, but especially in, we do a lot of improv, and, you know, when you're not really sure, I look at her for that guidance, and it's great, and it's, so it's, you know, she's very calm, she has a great demeanor about her, and that keeps me at ease. You know, and it's like, okay, I can look at the captain. You know, if you're a sailor on a ship and your captain's going crazy, you're like, okay, I'm going crazy.
Captain,
they're like, you know, and all of a sudden you look at the captain, they're like, no, we got it, it's cool. You're like, oh, this is cool. So, which is great. I love working for her. And I was really, it meant a lot that she, you know, she contacted me after Surviving Sam. And, you know, I was only really in one scene. And it was one of the most important scenes that sets up the whole series in the pilot. And afterwards we spoke, and I thanked her and everything. And, you know, I was so excited that I was just cast in the pilot. And then she contacted me afterwards. She's like, I think you're great, you're funny, you know, and I think she checked out some of my stand-up bits from my website. And she's like, you know, I want you to be a part of this show. What's it going to take with Tommy Gooch? And I was honored. I was super excited and, you know, jump in with both feet. And I love working for her, and Maria is the producer. And it's great. And me and Tommy have a lot of fun. It's, you know, each episode we go in and we really don't know how it's going to turn out. You know, we have episode 2 comes out this week. We do a whole kickboxing thing.
And oh,
I'm
in better shape than Tommy. So I'm just, that's the hint. That's all I'm saying. And, you know, and I'm pretty arrogant and cocky in there with him. You know, I'm trying to, like, really, you know, put him down. And it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, which is, you know, and you could see that if when you're watching it, you could see it. And even in the trailer, like you said, you know, they're, like, they're throwing a medicine ball at him. It's... It's a lot of fun.
What, did you know Tommy before you did the series?
You know, I've heard of him, and I've seen him. You know, being a comedian, you may meet them passing by, or you see their names, and you know, like they're performing a week after you or a week before you. So I never met him, but I've heard about him, and I knew, and we have mutual friends. So it was like all these stories, and then I met him, and we totally clicked. You know, we're joking around a lot, and you know, I like to play tricks. I'm a big prankster in real life anyway. So, like, you know, his family showed up for one of the things, and I was joking, you know, with his sister, and I was like, you know, tell Tommy, you know, I was hitting on you and all that stuff. So every time I see Tommy, I'm always like, dude, I was like, man, your sister keeps calling me. You got to tell her.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I mean, we're always doing a lot of stuff like that, you know. But it's a lot of fun. It's a blast working with all of them, you know. And no, definitely everyone's got to check it out. You know, it's SilverTreeEntertainment.com. You know, and there's a bunch of other shows on there too. You know, Surviving Sam is going to be coming out, the pilot for that, and that stars Alicia Minshew. She was one of my children all those years.
Yes, we absolutely love and adore her. We've had her on for Surviving Sam when Rob Magnotti came on, because, of course, he plays her husband. And so she called in, and they talked about it. And that's another very, very funny web series that I'm looking forward to.
Yes, and then they have an another one called Stand. What is it? Stand Up. It's called Stand Up Laughing. So it's about this like other comedians, you know, stand up comics, and then they have a cooking show. So there's a lot going on, you know, and there's a ton in development. They're doing a lot of scripted sitcoms, so it's really exciting time being, you know, working with Tony and Maria. They got a lot going on, which, you know, I'm looking forward to, and I'm, you know, hopefully and planning on working with them in the future, which, you know, it's really exciting there, which is great, you know.
I have no doubt they'll have you back for something else sooner or later. I mean,
yeah. No, hopefully, you know, and they're great to work with. They really are, and you know, they're very accessible, which is great. You know, I could talk to them and just even creatively, you know, and that's what you want as an actor and a comedian. You'd say, hey, what do you think about this? And they'll go, okay. And they're not blowing you off, and it doesn't mean they're going to use it, but they're acknowledging you and they're listening to you. And sometimes they'll go, hey, you know what, that works. You know, I had to sing a karaoke song that I lost a bet, and on, you know, on the thing, and I kind of said, just do a modern song instead of, you know, some of the older, there was songs they were picking that were older songs, and just I knew I had to sing a song, and I didn't know what song, and I just said, you know, it's going to be a younger generation. Do a song maybe by a Katy Perry or a Taylor Swift or a Meghan Trainor, and they pick a newer song, which I had no idea how to sing. And I had to sing it. And I didn't know what song it was. So, you know, I definitely bit off more than I could chew. You know, it ended up being very funny. But it's something like that where at least I could give some feedback, not that I can really – you know, practice it, kind of, but, you know, it was more that kind of creativity, which could help. So,
right,
it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's definitely funny. And for our listeners, be sure to subscribe to SilverTreeEntertainment.com to be able to see all of these different series that they have going on, because for $4.99 a month, I mean, that's nothing to be able to watch
nothing.
All of these things. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of other places out there that charge you a lot more, you know, and you don't always get what you want.
Yeah, and you know, it's you know, you can obviously you can watch it over and over, and it's, you know, there's multiple series, and the some of the stuff it's really funny. It's I you know, like you said, just, you know, I can't wait till you watch the full episode of the first one. It's, you know, the whole waxing thing is you know, even, and I know it's me, and I'm watching it almost like an alien watch, you know, I'm like, is that
really
getting waxed? Oh, totally. Cause, you know, when the first time I saw it, I was like, I don't remember saying it. I remember feeling it, but I don't remember saying that. You know, I was screaming at the woman. I was like, you're not on my Christmas list anymore. You know, I don't even remember. You know,
Well, there's one thing that I want to bring up that I read about because I find it so fascinating, that you were going to perform in an open mic and you were really nervous, so you took a walk and you met, of all people, George Carlin.
Yes.
How did that conversation go? What happened there?
So I'll backtrack. So this was 1994. It was July of 1994. And I was, you know, in my early 20s. And I was supposed to go do my first open mic at New York Comedy Club that night. And it ended up, my brother was like, hey, there's this meditation class, why don't you come? I was like, okay. And, you know, I went to this meditation thing, and I really couldn't sit still because I really wanted to go do this stand-up. And the ironic thing was, like, two nights before, I rented a video of George Carlin, and he performed at Rutgers, which is kind of, at the State Theater, which is ironic. And I was just watching how he did transitions and, you know, from joke to joke and how he started. And I went outside, it was 75th and Columbus in New York City, right outside this church. And literally, I remember saying to myself, I just need help. Like, I need advice. And I was looking down, and literally I looked up, and he walked right past me. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I didn't want to scream Carlin, because, like, a part of me was like, someone else is going to run over and talk to him. And I just said, hey, and he had that, like, almost Kangol hat backwards, if you know what I'm talking about. And
yeah, yes.
And I said, hey, I go, George. And he looked back and he waved. And I run over to him, and I know exactly, quote unquote, this is exactly what I said. I remember word for word. I said, "Hi, George. My name is Eric Jacob. I'm doing stand-up comedy for the first time next week. Do you have any advice?" And he goes, "Sure, can you take a walk?" And I was like, "Yep." Literally, we went for a walk. We walked for at least 40, 45 minutes. And he was scouting. At the time, he had a TV show, so he was scouting locations for a shoot, for an episode, and like for outside a neighborhood kind of thing. And he was giving me advice, and it was so – there was a part – the first minute, I was a fan. And I was like, "Do I ask for his autograph?" And I was like, "No, I need to keep this professional." No, I mean, you know, I was like, I'm
– Right
now, I'm a comedian talking to another comedian. And he gave me such advice that it resonates much more today than it did then. You know, just he was talking to me about transitions, going from a joke to joke, how he practices and prepares. And that's almost the most important thing that I see today of the advice he gave me. And he was really great. Like, I said my name the first time, and at the end of the conversation, a guy walked over and he said, "Hey, George, how you doing? You know, you're my favorite comedian." And he said to the guy, Jacob, another comedian, and I was shocked he remembered my name
after 5 minutes.
Oh, isn't that nice?
It was so cool. And, you know, the shame at the time was we didn't have cell phones, so I had to drive an hour and a half home before I could tell everybody. So for an hour and a half, I'm like, "Oh, my God,
oh, God.
I just met George Collins. I can't tell anybody." You know, this day and age, if it happened, you'd post it on Facebook and Twitter before
right.
you got in your car. You know, you'd take a selfie with them. And,
yeah.
But I had to get home. I had to call 30 people and tell 30 of the story at the same time. You know, like, you just had to keep telling the story over and over back then.
Yeah.
So, but he was amazing. And the ironic thing, so a week later when I'm doing – it was a contest, and I was waiting backstage, and right before I went on, there was all these pictures of comedians. And I didn't realize, and I looked up, and right in front of me was a picture of George. And I was like, you know, it was almost like, oh. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Kinda. And, you know, I was one of two comedians invited back, and it was great, and it helped my confidence. And then the following week, I bombed.
Oh, no.
It's got to happen. You know, I did great the first night. But it's true. It's very honest. You know, I the second week I bombed. I totally bombed. You know?
Yeah, you got to take the good with the bad because that's the only way you're going to learn.
Oh, 100%. I mean, literally, and, you know, I went in, you know, the first night I did all my college humor because I was still in college, and the next week I do college humor, and I didn't realize everyone's adults and they didn't really get half my jokes. Like, it was a different kind of crowd. Not regular adults, it's just a totally different crowd.
Yeah.
So and then I realized, oh, you got to play to the crowd.
Right.
So I was 22, you know?
Right.
But, yeah, no, sure. And it's an experience like, you know, that was just an amazing thing. And I remember when he passed away, I was so sad. And, you know, I only met him once in my life. And it wasn't like, you know, if I met him then afterwards, it's not like he probably would never have remembered my name. But he was just so honest and sincere and cool. He didn't have to give me his time. He didn't have to do anything. And he was great about it. He was gracious, and he gave advice, and he was honest, and he said certain things. He's like, look, you know, there's things he could say that I couldn't say because he earned the respect after being, you know, he said people know he's George Carlin, and they think they're his friend because he's in their living room. Where
right,
I was just
right.
an amateur, and they're going to go, who's Eric Jacob, and how dare you say that? Where he could say it, and they're like, ah, it's George, my neighbor.
Yeah.
You know, and he's right. You know, there's certain things. So, no, he was amazing. It was, you know, I was very, I guess, blessed to say that he gave me that opportunity to speak with him, you know.
Yeah, it was definitely fate that you ran into him. You know, I really believe it was your time, and that was the right place, right time kind of thing, so.
Oh, yeah. And ironically, you know, 10 minutes before, that street was packed. And when I saw him, there was not one person on either side of the street. Like, literally, it was like me and him just caught. And it was just weird because literally, I didn't see anybody in front of me. I looked down, and I was like, I just need help. And all of a sudden, I look up, he walked right past me. And it was literally, you know, it was people were like, wow, great story. And it was, you know, it's just, you know, it was one of those moments. And
definitely.
You know, at the time, I was like, oh, I'm going to, you know, my career. And it took, obviously, much longer. You know, I stepped away from comedy for a long time and acting, and then, you know, but I guess, you know, life experience, you learn from it all, you know?
Exactly. Now, do you, you are paying that forward, right? Have you given advice to other ones just starting out? I mean, because you're more experienced.
Totally.
You're more seasoned.
Yeah, you know, and it's not even just that. It's even, like, so with my film that I just shot, you know, there's one of my friend's sons. He wants to get even into film production, and I was like, look, if you want to be on set, you can be an assistant. You know, I'll get you a credit for on, you know, and you could be around. So I try to do things where I know if they're interested in it and they're already taking their step forward, you know, if the kid's lazy, I'm not just going to give, you know, but I know he's like, you know, he's studying and he's reading books about it and he's taking classes. And I was like, and I offered, I said, hey, does he want to be, you know, an assistant on set? Cause you know, and be around the director. And they were like, his mother was like, yeah, I'll talk to him. He was really appreciative and it was great. He was on set and, you know, younger comedians, it's funny, if they ask me for advice, I'll tell them what I know, but the reality is not people, I'm not so successful in their eyes. Like, there's always, a cockiness with comedians in a way. And they don't, no one wants advice unless I was really, you know, they'll ask a Chris Rock, a Jerry Seinfeld, you know, but no, it's almost, you know, a businessman, are they going to ask another businessman for advice only if they're driving a Ferrari?
Right.
You know, there's almost a certain stat. You know, if I had my own TV show, then an actor would ask me for advice. You know, that point, I guess it's in every business, and until, especially in our society, unless there's a status thing like their own show or a certain amount of money, would people ask for advice.
You got that blue check mark on Twitter, Facebook.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, it's. Exactly. You know, it's the whole, but, and all, you know, even as actors, you know, one of the things is like to get an IMDb credit, you know, Internet Movie Database, you know, and people try, you know, but people look at, you know, hey, are you legit? Oh, do you have a credit? How many credits do you have? You know, oh, is it a real show? Is it on IMDb? You know, there's things on in the industry or, you know, for comedy, have you ever headlined? Or are you only an opener or do you do, as they call it, the middle, you know, if you're between the opener and the headliner? You know, everything's political. Even, you know, businesses and real estate was when I was in real estate.
Right.
And comedy is and acting is, you know, it's that's how the world works.
Definitely.
Yeah.
David, I know you had another question. Why don't you go ahead and ask?
Yes, I did. I heard you for a while took a job.
What was that? I missed that. Took a job what?
I heard that you had taken a job as a high school teacher prior to
yes.
So
yeah.
Do you what similarities and differences you find between teaching and stand up?
That's probably the most interesting question. So I was a substitute teacher in Los Angeles in 97, and then I became a full-time teacher after that. So I was at the LA Unified School District, and I was a teacher for 3.5 years there. And I practiced my stand-up there, and I didn't realize it. It's almost like, remember in the movie Karate Kid, when he whacks on, whacks off, he didn't realize he was practicing karate until he was done. You know, I didn't realize how much stage presence I was practicing. You know, my classroom ranged from 38 to 43 kids. I was in my late 20s. And the high school kids were taller than me, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
So and it wasn't in the best area. So I was when I first started, I was very intimidated. And I had to use, like, the East Coast toughness but also comedy to relate to them. And, you know, I had my curriculum, but other teachers had a curriculum. And it ended up I had students that only showed up for my class where literally police officers came to my class because they knew certain students only showed up for my class. And then they arrested them.
Oh,
like, it was very violent school.
Oh,
wow.
But I practiced, you know, it's like right before my show on Saturday, I was talking to my one of my close friends from back in L.A., and I said, you know, it was like the natural, you know, butterflies, and I said, I'm nervous. And he's like, listen, man, for almost 4 years straight, every day, for 6 hours a day, you did stand-up in front of those kids. And he knew it. And he, you know... And each day was a different gig in a way. And it really was like, as I was saying, the Karate Kid. Like, so that prepared me much more than I realized, and it made me much more comfortable with stage. I've never been nervous on a stage, and I don't know if that's just that's part of my personality, but also definitely all those years teaching, you know,
mm-hmm.
and being scared.
Yeah.
I was more scared. Yep. I was more scared in the beginning of a school year with some of those students because I knew they were in gangs, and I knew I was definitely more scared with confronting some of those students and teaching them than I've ever been on stage.
I can imagine, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I was brought up in an affluent community. What did I know about gangs? I mean, you read about it. You know, and it's funny, but it's true. You know, all of a sudden when they're telling you and then cops are arresting them, you're like, wow, this is kind of crazy. And you kind of want to do some stand-up about it, but then you're like, I can't really give names. They're going to come after me. You know, but, no, I didn't realize, you know, like how much that probably was the best thing ever for my stand-up was being able to go up. And because I used comedy for my teachings, you know, not all teachers use comedy, but I had to,
mm-hmm.
that was my way of survival in the classroom, and it works, and now it's paying off for me now.
Well,
and improv,
I tell
actor,
you, I wish,
you know?
Yeah, I wish that I was in your class. Of course, not with a bunch of kids that are getting arrested, but
yeah.
I just think back to the classes that I took in high school, and I can only think of one teacher, maybe, that was funny sometimes, but most of them are so serious, and they just want to get through the school day and teach you what they need to and send you off, you know. And after, in freshman year, my last class of the day was science, which I hated, so I took that freshman year to get through it right away for that credit. But I would be laying there with my head on the table sleeping, and my partner that I sat with was such a dork. He was a geek. He wouldn't he wouldn't even like elbow me when the teacher was like talking to me because I'm hiding behind my book.
Yeah, you know, but with comedy, I could also be tough. You know, I remember saying to a kid, I was like, "You better," you know, we were reading out loud in a class, and I was like, "Page 175," and he's like, "What if I'm not on page 175?" And I remember saying, I was like, and we're in L.A., so I said, if we have an earthquake and that book falls on the floor, it better fall on page 175.
Oh,
and I was
God.
Like, and if you're trapped under the building and they dig you up, that book better be on page 175. And everyone they thought it was funny. And so I'm running things like a week later, there was like a small little earthquake. And the joke was like a bunch of people were like, "Hey," they called me Mr. J. "Well, no, Mr. J, look, my book is still on the same page."
Yeah.
it was funny, but you have to kind of, you know, use that.
Yeah.
I just remember that. So, yeah, I mean, you could be tough, but I did it. They also, you know, you could use comedy and toughness in a way of, you know, they knew I cared, I was sincere, and, you know, I took it serious.
Yeah.
So yeah, but no. But as you said, that was the best thing. You know, to bring it back. You know, the teaching really was the most beneficial thing for me as a comedian and doing improv while acting, by far.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, it does sound it.
Now,
yeah.
Who was your comedic hero?
You know, as a kid, I love. You know, yes, Bill Cosby, I liked him, but Richard Pryor, Eddie Murphy. Jonathan Winters, my brothers.
Yeah.
I used to sneak Cheech and Chong albums onto my. I had we had the Cheech
and
Chong records, and I had the like plastic record player in the basement. So I would sneak. I would take their big albums and sneak it onto my plastic record player. And the funny thing, I really didn't know what they were talking about. I just I remember like one of the bits. Ralph and Herbie were the two dogs, and they were pooping. Mm. And I was like in third grade, and I thought that was hysterical. You know, I didn't understand any of the pot humor back then.
Yeah.
But I laughed because it sounded funny.
Yeah.
You know,
I know.
I listened to it, you know, a couple of years ago, and I was like, I had no idea what they were talking about. But, you know, Richard, I love Richard Pryor. You know, even Carol Burnett was a genius.
Oh, my
like,
God.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and some of it was just how they acted. In it, like they're, you know, and even not even just straight up stand up. Some, you know, like Carol Burnett shows and Jack. What was it?
Yes.
Benny Hill. You know, Benny
yes.
Hill.
Oh,
funny.
Yes, I remember him.
Yeah,
I remember Benny Hill.
Yeah, so it wasn't even just straight up comedy. Sometimes it was more situational.
Physical?
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Physical. You know, I always loved Robin Williams. You know, his
God rest his soul, yes.
Yeah, I mean, what a talent. And, you know, I don't even look at what, you know, when I look at him, when I think back at him, I don't think about that part. I think of just what a genius he was and, you know,
mm-hmm.
But there's certain bits, like, there's certain routines I loved through the years. You know, there's been some Stephen Wright routines I loved, and, you know, I found some old Red Fox, you know, to listen to on YouTube. And
yeah, another good one.
Dirty and funny.
Mm-hmm.
The modern comedians I love, you know, like Lisa Lampanelli and Jim Jeffries are really crude humor,
yep.
And I like it because I don't do it. So I admire that they're really good at it. Like, they're really, really good at it. And Bill Burr, I don't know if you've ever listened to Bill Burr, watch Bill Burr. He's really funny. And he's one of the few comedians I belly laugh at. And, you know, he's raised in Boston, Roman, you know, Catholic, and it's Irish Catholic. And it's because I'm not that. And it's just funny hearing that point of view, you know, and I think that's what I like.
Yeah, it is.
Hearing about someone different, and it's funny. You know, Jim Jeffries is Australian, so he talks a lot about that. And to me, it's funny because it's a new world he's showing me from his point of view. You know?
Yeah, but, speaking of Richard Pryor, we had Rain Pryor on our show. We did an interview with her. Have you caught any of her stuff?
I was supposed to open for her at Catch a Rising Star a couple months back, and I'm so upset I didn't. I had to. I think my son was sick that weekend and I couldn't go. And her brother, Richard Jr., is good friends with one of my friends who's a musician, Dave Nelson, in Nebraska. And Richard asked my friend Dave to write a song for him, for his documentary. So it was like this, you know, 6 degrees of separation. And Dave called, you know, Richard and said, "Hey, my friend's opening for your sister." And then I had to cancel. So I never got to meet her. But I wish I did. How was she? Was she great?
Oh, I mean, I haven't seen any of her shows except what you can see on video and on her website and all that. Because I'm in Chicago, and I know her show was out of New York on stage, her one-woman show, Latkes and, oh, my gosh, what is it, Latkes and something. I can't even think of what the name of it is right now. But she does that whole show, and, I mean, she talks about her dad and everything, and she talks about different people, and she does different characters, and it's just amazing. It's just amazing. And she's done a lot. She's really, really good at what she does.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of great things. I haven't got to see her, and I really wanted to meet her in person, and let alone I would have been really excited. I was supposed to open for her, and I had to cancel at the last second. I remember a couple months back.
Yeah.
But no, she's.
Well,
you know,
I'm sure there'll be another time. You know, you might even run into her. I mean, you're not far from New York, so.
No,
do you
I'm
go
in New York
to
all
other.
Time.
So you might run into her there. You know, I know she does a lot of things all over the country, so.
Yeah.
But,
well, we've also shot What's It Gonna Take in parts of New York. You know, and there's other stuff I've shot throughout, you know, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, kind of tri-state area, and then even down in Philly, I've shot stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this whole area, it's you know, very everything's close together, driving distance.
Yeah.
So it makes it easy.
Well,
know?
I'll tell you one thing. Her book is a must-read about her life growing up. I mean, it's a real page-turner. You don't want to put it down. And you'd be amazed at what she's been through and appreciate so much more where she is today.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, it's the tough thing. Her husband, her father was a legend, you know, in his own right, obviously. And no matter how great she is, it's still hard because she will always be Richard Pryor's daughter. So,
exactly.
And it's not even just in this industry. If your father was an amazing lawyer and he was mayor of a town and became senator and governor, you know, you could, if you became mayor, still your dad was mayor. You know?
Right, exactly.
So it's in every industry. If you're following in the same field of your parents, it's got to be tough, especially if they're a legend.
Right,
you know?
That's true.
Right. Or a legend in their own mind.
Yeah. Well, but Richard was a legend.
Yes, he was.
He did. You know, he you know, with definitely even during the Civil Rights Movement in the 60s, he was you know, an African-American on TV, you know, on Johnny Carson. And, you know, he did a lot of stuff way ahead, you know, and he broke the barriers for a lot of things being said and done,
right.
you know, during stand-up, and he was a genius at it. He really,
yeah.
you could find some old stuff and or even interviews, you know, I saw an interview, like Letterman talked about how when he was younger, he'd be, and him and Leno would be in L.A. at the Comedy Store, and Richard Pryor sometimes would just show up and just go up on stage not prepared, and he was a genius. And it floored everybody. They're like, well, that's why he's Richard. You know?
Right.
You know, that's it. Enough said, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, back to you. I'd like to know more about this web series, Neverland. I didn't get to view that at all. Is there a trailer for that?
There's an episode. It's on YouTube right now. The first episode. So Neverland, it's called Neverland, the web series. It's directed by this young man, Robert Paul Verdi, and Neverland's about LARPing. Now, that's L-A-R-P. I didn't know what it was when I auditioned, and that stands for live action role playing. And these are guys, they're self-described, they'll call themselves, they're like, I'm a nerd, and they become these certain characters that they act out and dress up as. Like, they can be knights and kings and orcs and dwarves and, I mean, really interesting things. So, and he does, it's a sitcom, and it's extremely well written, it's amazingly shot. We shoot it in the woods in Sparta, New Jersey. Like, the first night we shot was in January when it was 0 degrees out.
Oh, no.
12 a.m. to 7 a.m.
Oh, wow.
And on my website, you can see a picture, on ericjacob.com, you can see a picture, and I'm wearing this chainmail, and it stuck to my skin. It was so cold.
Oh, my gosh.
It was 0 degrees. And so, it's in the first episode, I'm in like just one or two scenes, but in the second episode that's coming out July 1st, I'm in a bunch of scenes. And I play like a character in his 40s who's an accountant that still LARPs. And most of the people in the show are in their 20s. And the interesting thing, I'm one of only a few actors on set. There's probably 40 people on set. Most of the people are real LARPers. And I'm still learning. It's a whole cult, like an underground following. I mean, like, it's amazing. Like, there was a girl, and her nick, you know, she goes by LARP Girl, and I found she has like 10,000 followers on Twitter and on YouTube. And I was like, who are you? And, you know, people were like, you don't know who she is? And I was like, yeah. You know? And she really educated me on a lot of stuff. She's like the celebrity in the LARP world, you know? Kind of, she was like the Angelina Jolie in the LARP world, I swear to God.
Yeah.
You know, people propose to her online and all this stuff. And, you know, my outfit was like, cost like $2,000. It's amazing. Like this, it's real, like plated and steel and chainmail and the helmets. I mean, but it's such a well-written show, and it's funny, and it's kind of weird. You know, it's almost like, best in show about like people that are dog owners. This is like mocking people that LARP, and so it's and if you never did it, if you've never done it, it's even funnier because you're like, these people are nerds, like they're and they say that all the time. No, they'll tell you straight up. Like we shot the last scene last night for episode 2, and I was talking to a girl, and she's like, oh, I'm a total nerd. She's like, I'm a Dungeons and Dragons person, this and that, and you know, I didn't really, like, you know, they're just, this is what they do once a month on weekends. They go up and they pay to do it, and they have these characters. So it's a very well-written show. It's shot beautifully outdoors for the most part. And, Neverland, the web series, you can check it out on YouTube right now. There's a really great picture, a promo shot of me on my website at ericjacob.com. You can see. It's very cool.
Well, I definitely will be checking that out. I mean, that sounds really funny. And that's my go-to after, you know, a day like, well, I didn't have the greatest day today, let's put it that way. And so when I'm done laughing with you, and I thank God that I have you on today because you did take me out of that funk that I was in. You know, I'll turn the TV on, and I go right to comedy. Right to comedy. That is my number one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's great to hear. And I'm happy, you know, for the past hour, at least, you know, we got your mind off, you know, the personal stuff with your father, and obviously we wish him well.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, comedy could, you know, even with what's going on, you got to try and find the humor in it all. You know, like as I said, mm-hmm. with you know, my father's Alzheimer's, and, you know, this, you got to try and laugh, if, otherwise you're going to cry.
Right.
That's true.
Exactly. You know, so. Well, last but not least, tell us about your role in the short film Trash Can on the Left, which, by the way, for our listeners, premiered at the Cannes Film Festival in May.
Yes, the Cannes Film Festival. So I auditioned for this probably, I think, in November, and I don't really go for short films, and it was a short film, and there was something just about it. Like, I had a gut feeling, and I said, you know what, let me audition for this, and I went in, and I knew at the audition I nailed it, and it's a dramatic role. There's nothing comedic about it, which I was super excited about, and for a couple years, for the last 2 years, anything I auditioned for was just dramatic. So it's ironic that now I'm doing all this comedic stuff, which is great. But so we shot that in December, and even when we shot it, I was like, "This is something." Felt really good about it. You know, it's just it just went smooth, and I liked the story. And then I think it was like May 1st, I got an email. They're like, "Oh, we're premiering it, having our world premiere at the Cannes Film Festival in France." And I was like, "What?" And then I went to the Cannes Festival, and I saw the movie poster. I mean, I found out by accident, and I saw my name on the poster. I was super excited. It was my first movie poster.
Wait a minute. You got to go to it?
No, I did not. I went to the website, I said.
The website. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I saw, you know, the movie poster, and then I emailed the director. I said, congratulations. You know, can you send me a copy of the poster?
Yeah.
You know? There's only one time is that you're, you know, you have, for your first movie poster, and he sent me a copy of it, and I was super excited, you know, and it premiered at Cannes, and at that point, I still didn't even see the finished product until the day before he sent me a copy, so I was super excited, and the ironic thing, at that point, I've been just working out a lot and eating healthy, so I've lost like 30 pounds in the last 6 months. Since I shot it, I was 20 pounds lighter, so I'm looking at it, and I was like, wow, I'm a different person, you know, and it was only a couple months, but it was great. It was such a great experience, and he was really professional director, I was just really excited, and one of the things my friend said, he's like, well, you could check that off your career bucket list. You got into Cannes, and I was like, yeah.
Oh, my gosh,
how
many people could say that?
Yeah.
Definitely.
I was super psyched, you know, and, I only found out, like I said, like, a week before, I think, that it premiered. So people were like, are you going to France? I said, no. You know, it wasn't like, and I didn't even know about it, let alone how could I, until right before, let alone get tickets. Would have been probably really difficult anyway. But, super exciting. The last, you know, year has been great. I'm looking forward to the, you know, not even just the next year, the next 6 months, you know, we're going to shoot more episodes of What's It Going to Take for Silvertree. You know, I know they got some other scripted sitcoms planned, so I'm hoping to be part of that. And then just auditioning for other stuff. And, you know, like I'll let you guys know when my film comes out with the stand-up comedy film. You know,
please
so you guys
do.
Copy
yes.
that.
Please
yeah.
do. Thank
and,
you.
No problem. And, it's gonna be an exciting year coming up. I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, it sounds like it, and we're really excited for you. I mean, we love so far what we've seen, and we can't wait to see more from you. Hopefully one of these days you get over to Chicago and do some stand-up over here or something, you know, and I'll get to go see you live.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'll let you know when I'm out that way, which would be great. And then, I could definitely get the name to the face. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to see that, but yeah. No, I'm only kidding. Why don't you go ahead and tell our listeners how they can find you, your social media, again, with your website and so forth.
Okay. So first, for What's It Gonna Take and Surviving Sam and all the other shows, you can find it at SilvertreeEntertainment.com. Again, that's SilvertreeEntertainment.com. My show's What's It Gonna Take with comedian Tommy Gooch. And also, Neverland, the web series, you can find on YouTube. And then my website, you get ericjacob.com, or even on Facebook, Eric Jacob fan page. And that's ericjacob. And then I'm on Twitter. You know, you can find me everywhere. I'm really trying to be everywhere. But like my fan page, I update it constantly about, you know, I even let, you know, I let them know, hey, come check out Talk to Radio. I'm going to be on from 7 to 8, you know, Eastern time. So I'm always updating. I put pictures from last night I shot for Neverland. You know, I was all wrapped up with bandages, and I had stuff from my stand-up show the other day. So there's always, yeah, you guys become fans on my fan, you know, and you can see a bunch of pictures and, you know, from different TV shows or projects I'm doing. I'm always updating it and letting them know where I'm performing. And, you know, it's great. That's one great thing with social media. So, again, Silvertree Entertainment,
for sure.
ericjacobfanpage.com on Facebook, and ericjacob.com.
And at Eric Jacob on Twitter, because that's how we got together through Silvertree Entertainment, thankfully. You know, Tony reached out to me and let me know about what's it going to take with you and Tommy, and here we are today. And Take Two Radio appreciates you being
on. and thank you, Pam and David. I really appreciate it. No, this is great. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thank you. We're so glad you enjoyed yourself. It was a thrill a minute for us. And keep in touch. We will see you somewhere soon.
Awesome. Take care. Have a good evening.
You too. Thanks again.
Too. Good night. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Well, that hour flew by, huh?
It did.
it always helps with laughing. And I think we did that with the majority of the show, you know.
That's true. Our laughter just took up about 20 minutes every time.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
We only had to fill up about 40.
Right. Well, I'm definitely going to check out Neverland on YouTube because that sounds really good as well. And again, for our listeners, subscribe to SilvertreeEntertainment.com and watch Tommy and Eric on What's It Gonna Take. You can watch Eric and Alicia Minshew and Rob Magnotti on Surviving Sam, their trailer there. These shows haven't actually started yet. They're just trailers, but I'm sure they'll be starting soon. And when I have that information, I will be posting it on take2radio.com, and that's with the number 2. I do have the trailer and some information in that for Surviving Sam on the website already, under Actors, Gigs, and Events, and it's under the Home tab. And then tonight, later on, I will go ahead and put the trailer for What's It Gonna Take on there as well, in case you don't remember the website. But definitely subscribe to that. That $4.99 a month will be very worthwhile for you, especially if you love comedy and the other things that they offer on there. Like you said, there's a cooking show in that too. So I have to check out everything that they have on there. And with that, let's see, we were supposed to have a show on Friday with Dr. Mary Barrett, but unfortunately she had to cancel due to personal reasons. And Saturday will be the paranormal show with...
I Talk Paranormal.
Yeah, with Jim Mallard. And then on Sunday for Take Two Radio Junior, we have a guest author coming on as well. Her name is Bobby Assad, and she'll be talking about her book, Tucker's Story, which is about a German shepherd and his story. So it's for the kids, and that's at 7 p.m. Eastern Time for Saturday and Sunday. The kids show is really great. They get, you know, the authors come on, and we ask them a few questions, and then they read their story. So it's 30 minutes or so, maybe sometimes less, of entertainment for your kids. So tune in if you can. And any upcoming shows and guests will be on take2radio.com as well as take2radiojr.com. I also have a music show that's take2radiomusic.com. I have interviews on Wednesdays, and on Mondays I play an hour of indie music from around the world. And I think that's about it. David joins me with this show, and the other shows are pretty much different hosts. So, but you'll enjoy any of them, I'm sure. So that's it. Follow us on Twitter at Take Two Radio. David's at Take Two Radio Crew. We have a Facebook, Take Two Radio. Everything with Take Two Radio, you'll find us. Just type it in. So take care, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the show. I know we did, and we'll chat again soon. Thanks, David, for joining me today. It's been a long time, but it was a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun, and I missed you.
Me too. Thanks. We'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Get connected with Take Two Radio on Facebook or Twitter at Take Two Radio. For email updates on future shows, follow at Blog Talk Radio. For previous episodes, upcoming guests, and more, visit TakeTwoRadio.com.